Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nick, and we welcome back Alejandro.
Thank you.
As well. Lovely to have you back in the studio with us. Ali, to witness Chelsea thrashing Everton by 6-0. This is very much the Cole Palmer show, the England international getting no less than 4 goals, including one penalty, which, interestingly enough, would be one of the big talking points from the game, because there was quite the argument that ensued once it was given. Madueke wanted it. Jackson wanted it. In the end, Jackson said it was OK for Madueke to have it. And then Madueke is fighting with Conor Gallagher, who's the Chelsea captain, who eventually gets the ball and then gives it to Cole Palmer, who scores the penalty. But it was quite the scene indeed. Chelsea, though, in the end, despite all that soap opera, with a very impressive victory, beating a very poor Everton by 6-0, which leaves Chelsea sitting in ninth. They are actually only 3 points off Manchester United, and Pochettino's side do have a game in hand. Let's welcome in, shall we? Mario Malcuer joins us, of course, former Chelsea defender. Mario, you're on, and we have something positive to say finally about Chelsea.
Hey, you see, I'm not celebrating on my own. You see, he's joining me, so that's a good thing. No, definitely. It was a game, you know, like, we've been talking about it for a long time, and we're hoping for them to finish games off. So finally, I have seen it now. I was all the way at the stadium last week, and I saw it, and they couldn't finish it off. And now, finally, I see it from distance, and they finished the game off. It was a game, I mean, look, you already spoke about Palmer. I think Palmer was the one that took the lead and the way he dictated it. And Stevie jumped on a penalty. I thought it was so silly, that penalty situation. I was happy, you know, what he said about Gallagher jumping in. Yeah, he had to jump in, clear the path for them. Because at the end of the day, I think before the game, in any team, it's already, the decision is already made. Palmer takes the penalty. So I don't understand what Madueke and Jackson are trying to do. I know you guys want to score, but then you got to wait for your opportunities.
Should we do the penalty now? May as well do the penalty now, then. Mario has led us down that path inevitably. Mauricio Pochettino was asked about it after the game. This is what the Chelsea coach had to say. I thought we behaved like kids today. When this happens, we need to learn and learn quick. Perform like today, but behave much better. Next time they're all out, it's not a joke. It's impossible after a performance like this to have this behaviour. We have to learn a lot if we want to be a great team. Think more in a collective way than in an individual achievement. What's interesting, Stevie, when you take a look at the history, you can take this back to Chelsea against Manchester United when they had the penalty before.
Yep.
And there was an argument then between Madueke and Palmer.
Yep.
You would imagine that Pochettino would have used that as a reason to sort this out, which clearly he hadn't.
Well, I think what he's done is he hasn't gone heavy-handed with the first one and thinks, OK, you know, young players, you know, they don't understand that, you know, really being a pro at the highest level means that you bury everybody, every chance you get. But then this happens, and I think he's handled it well this time. You know, there's no doubt with the statement he's made how unhappy he is with the players, the whole situation.
Yeah.
So I think he's...
But surely a manager of
softly.
His experience should just gone, right, Cole Palmer, you're our penalty taker. Isn't that something you do
as
a manager?
Yeah, it does, aye. I'm just saying that the first time that happened earlier on in the season, you were talking about he went a little bit of a softly approach. This is the perfect approach. I think he's really stamped his authority on this. You're acting like a bunch of kids.
But my point is, shouldn't he have addressed this before?
No, well, he's... Everybody has a penalty taker, right?
Well, clearly, it wasn't clear.
Yeah.
Of course, it is clear.
No.
But then why are they fighting over the
because
penalty?
Because they're a bunch of kids, as he's just told you. That's what kids do. They think because it's 4-0, the game's
but
done.
We saw it, but
let's
I,
do
I,
the
I
nice
before,
thing.
We saw it in the Manchester United game. He obviously hasn't made it clear.
But I told you, he went softly with it.
No, but I'm not about what he said.
Know.
No, it's not what about he said
yes,
afterwards.
When you play with a striker, things like this happen. When you play with a striker like Jackson that wants to score, things like this happen there. You know, look. Sometimes when you play in a team, everything is being told before. Just like Stevie said, they tell you in advance. But strikers are the hardest people to play with sometimes. When they just want to count on scoring more goals. And that's why Jackson jumped up. But he's been told that he's not the first to strike the ball. But the thing is, like, when you stand on the pitch, hopefully the Palmer would say, oh, I got a hat-trick. You can take this one. No, the kid wants to add to his tally, so that's normal. So that's why the rest has to move.
Just think what I told you the first time, though. You can't... not every single time something goes wrong do you get a big hammer and smash everybody over the head. That's not always the best way.
No, I completely understand.
But sometimes, to your point, maybe that's what he should have done the first time. All I'm telling you is the first time round, he's went, OK, I'll do the softly approach. And there's no question, everybody knows who the penalty taker is, by the way. But because...
That's my point. That's what I'm
because
missing.
They're inexperienced and it's 4-0, Madueke thinks, well, I haven't got a goal. Jackson's got a goal. He's got three. I'll get it.
Right.
That's not... The best teams... You don't see that because everybody knows it's about, as I said, you get the chance to bury somebody, you bury them.
The funniest part of all of it is that Jackson was having a back and forth with Madueke, right? But somehow Madueke had convinced Jackson that he was going to take it. And then when Conor Gallagher grabbed the ball and gave it to Cole Palmer and said, no, neither one of you are taking it, it's Cole Palmer. Right. Then Jackson comes out of nowhere and said, oh, no. I'm okay with Madueke taking it, but not the actual penalty taker. Look, this is a real... Honestly, this is a non-issue. This is a non-issue. Chelsea, finally! Finally, they look like a team that can do things going forward. They look like a team that can score goals. They had a thorough performance, a dominant performance. Moises Caicedo, out of his mind today. You have Nicholas Jackson was good. Cole Palmer was good. Madueke was active down the right-hand side. It was a complete performance from Chelsea where there was no stress, no drama, no sense of Everton ever being in this game. I refuse to make this about the penalty kick situation. I have to focus on the performance of Chelsea. And if you want to go negative on Everton. Don't go negative on the penalty.
No, this is a symptom. What happened with the penalty?
Oh.
It's all very well. They beat Everton 6-0, who were atrocious, but they still beat them 6-0. But it's a symptom of one of the problems with this team. And because they beat Everton 6-0, and because they've had one incredible game, they've got some results recently, but they haven't played like this. I think it's a little early to start thinking that they've turned around the corner. And the fact that the penalty carry-on happened tells you they're not ready yet to be a proper team.
How good is Cole Palmer, Mario? How good was that first goal?
Very, very good. I think, you know, what Cole Palmer is very good at is, like, sometimes you see young talents and they can see things in advance. Normally you become a little bit older, you understand, and then you do things. I had it, for example, like Wayne Rooney for me was a great example, that young and pick up the ball in areas where you don't expect it. Cole Palmer, he picks up the ball and his mindset is already two steps ahead. I think that makes you a better player. When you watch a player, you always gotta know, what are you gonna do when you get the ball? And I think some people always think it's about tricks or this or that. It's about playing simple and knowing exactly what you're gonna do in your next step. And that's why I think he scored the goal. Especially that goal that he scored with his right foot. I don't think people will highlight that a lot, but he's a lefty. And when you are that comfortable to lob your goalkeeper, Pickford, with your right foot that quickly, I think that says a lot about your talent.
I tell you, his face and the way he goes about it would make you think that butter wouldn't melt, wouldn't it? I mean, he just looks like a wee kid.
Do you think so?
Aye. But, no, that's what he looks like.
Right.
But he's not. You see the way he handled that penalty? That is maturity, by the way. All this nonsense is going on. Number one, there's no facial expression at all. He's actually he's helping shove them away. But you know, he's doing all of this, but he's also thinking about his penalty. And then he converts the penalty. As if that hadn't happened. Tell you what, he's incredible for his age, mature.
There is a simple excellence quality to his game. A lot of the young players, and I think Mario just alluded to it, you think that you got to do 1,000 step overs.
Right.
Or you got to do the fancy trick, or you got to do this and that and the flick on. And he does, more often than not, he does what the game calls for. So the Meg today, the nutmeg to create space for himself, was the way to get past the defender. There was a purpose to it. It wasn't just for the sake of it. And the back heel to connect the pass to Jackson was what was available to him. And then the finish doesn't have to be hit with as hard as he possibly can. No, a simple, excellent finish. opens up his body and finds the far post in a manner in which he did. And that his game is a lot like that. It isn't just about running with the ball and doing this trick and doing this fancy thing and that fancy pass. Doing what the game calls for and doing it well, executing it well under pressure when there is a whole lot of people moving at a different speed, he's seen a different picture and executing that different picture much better than everybody else.
He's joined the top goal scorer with Erling Haaland.
Is it just me? But you know how we talk, you know, we always talk about, you know, when certain players get the ball, you sit on the edge of your chair. This guy makes you relax. He does the opposite to me. Yeah. Whenever he gets it, I relax because I know that he ain't losing it. Maybe he's going to score. He's maybe going to nutmeg somebody. But you know he's going to do something good and you know it's going to work. And so you just... He relaxes you.
I do like your relaxed boss. Just,
this is me relaxed boss. Yes.
You look very relaxed.
But he does, you know. Some people make you do that. This guy makes you just go, oh, this, he's got this in hand. You don't need to worry.
And who would have thought, Mario, given everything that's happened this season, is that Chelsea could have the top goal scorer in the Premier League come the end of the season?
Yeah, no, that's very, you know, like, you know, it's 20 goals with Haaland, 20 goals too. So for him to be up there, you understand it? Yeah, Haaland is not a name that we call about. You understand that's easy, but we saw what he's been doing, you know, for what, this is the second season. So for Cole to be up there, he's not also, he's a forward, not a striker. Haaland is a striker. So for him to be up there, I always say that when your forward is capable of getting among those ones, you know, Watkins, you saw it already. And he's been also, you understand, doing his job. So for him to be there, that says a lot from a kid that came from City that wanted to get in the team. And if we look at the team now at City, Foden is probably identical to his position and the way they play. So if you ask yourself, is this a right choice that he left? The only thing you could say is yes, because then now he's at Chelsea where he can develop himself, regardless if City is doing, you know, playing better and they performing better. But if not, the battle was going to be between him and Foden. And now both are playing, and now we're seeing both of them, their good qualities.
English guy, would you play him in the Euros?
I don't know. I don't think I'm playing him ahead of Foden. I'm not playing him ahead of Bellingham. I'm not playing him ahead of Saka.
So you're not playing him?
No.
I'm the same.
There we go. Anti-Chelsea. Yes. NFC continues.
Dan Thomas.
Looking at the bottom of the table, meanwhile, for Everton, this was not a good result. Because not only, obviously, you don't get any points, the goal difference suffers as well. And they are now on minus 16, along with Nottingham Forest. They are just 2 points above Luton Town. They do have a game in hand, though, on those around them. But, God, Everton. Imagine supporting Everton.
Do you know... When Branthwaite was going off at the end, I was thinking of last season, because I always thought if they could get Calvert-Lewin fit at the end of the season, this time last year, they would stay up. And they did. And as he was trotting off, I was thinking to myself, wow, if this guy's out for the rest of the season, they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Big trouble.
They are in big trouble.
I mean,
but are there worse teams around them? I suppose that's the question, isn't it? When you were talking about if they're going to go down.
Yeah. And I mean, because of the manager, you know that the next time they step on the field, that at least they're going to be in. I don't know who the opposition is, but they're going to be in their face at the very least. Now, whether they're good enough to beat anybody, I don't know. Obviously, last week I was scared that Liverpool had to go to Everton. Obviously, watching this, you're like, should have been that scared. But again, Everton can't be this bad again, surely.
The last thing, though, that you need is one of your more experienced players and one of, I suppose, important players in Pickford making mistakes like he did today. That's the last thing you need. Yeah. Because you're counting, you may struggle with some of the less experienced guys, less talented guys, but you're counting on your big names to carry you through the latter part of the season in order to survive. He can't be making this sort of mistakes and expect Everton to stay up.
Slightly tougher opposition coming up then for Chelsea. Next is the semi-final of the FA Cup as they take on Manchester City this weekend. That game will be live on ESPN Plus next Saturday. 24 hours later, it's Coventry against Manchester United at Wembley. Those games exclusively live on Plus.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Meanwhile, no doubt about it, was the big story yesterday, of course, both Arsenal and Liverpool losing. Sunday roast, top chumps, Super Sunday, blown it. The headlines not pulling any punches when it comes to both of their defeats. Let's hear from Mikel Arteta after the game.
Well, if one result is going to do that, then we are not strong enough. That's very simple. So we had one of the best performances in the first half that we had this season, by far, against a really good team. It should have been 3 or 4 or more. It didn't happen. In the second half, momentum shifted. We could not control and generate what we did in the first half. We struggled. We conceded 2 very poor goals, and we lost the game. So congratulate the opponent. And now is the moment to stand up as a leader, as a character, to make yourself count, because when you win and 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 win for 4 months, it's very, very simple to do it. The moment is now.
3 or 4 nil up after the first half. Did he watch the same match as we did?
I don't think he did. And honestly, if indeed you're going to make that argument, then you should also mention that Aston Villa had a real difficult time in the first half. They were very poor in their performance. So it isn't just about you, it's also about the opponent. Because when the opponent raised their level, you didn't raise yours. And beyond the performance of Arsenal, or lack thereof, at some point you have to look at yourself if you're Mikel Arteta. Because we sit here and criticize players when they have a tough time in a moment that truly matters. They're unable to score a goal, or they're unable to defend them. And one of the ways that those sort of moments are described is choking in a big moment. The decisions of Mikel Arteta in terms of the player personnel yesterday constitute a form of choking, constitute a form of a manager who goes against all the grain and all the logical decisions that you could make when you're having players that are playing at their best level that they've ever played for you as a manager. And I'm talking specifically, of course, about Kai Havertz, who's hot. And I mean hot. Scoring goals left and right. And for the first time with Arsenal, you can sense, you know what? You got in Kai Havertz a guy that can score goals for you. And what do? You change positions, and not only do you change him in positions, you put him back in the position in which he had been struggling early on in the season. How does that make sense? How does that, when you sit down as a manager, how can you convince yourself of making this decision and saying, yeah, this makes sense? I can tell you, as a striker, when you're hot, yeah, everything is clear. Everything is clear. The goal is clear. Your first touch is clean. You begin to understand and anticipate where the ball is going to bounce. And seemingly, the ball finds you in good spots all the time inside the 18-yard box. Everything becomes instinctive and natural. And you try to ride that wave as long as you possibly can. So if you're a manager, you don't mess with that. You don't touch that. Because the hardest thing to do in our game is to score goals. That's the main objective, to score goals. Kai Havertz was scoring goals for you, and you decided, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you 40, 50 yards away from goal. See how you like that. That doesn't make any sense.
Mario, how much blame should Arteta carry after this result?
It was a difficult moment. You know what the thing is? We've been watching them, and we always say that, hey, these are the times where we expect a lot more from them. And to slip up like that, I think, you know, Arteta will look at it, and also, If we look at City, City has a team that has so many players that they can bring on and change the game. At Arsenal, they most likely play with the similarities all the time. Eh? They have the similar, like maybe, what is it, 7 players that are always in the team. Even the guys at the back, you know, when we talk about, you know, Gabriel, you understand. Those kind of, the defenders are normally solid. But against Villa, the way Emery plays, he set them out.
Now we've obviously lost Mario there. You look at it, like starting someone like Zinchenko, who hasn't had a good season. Gabriel Jesus hasn't been the same player that he was when he first joined in such a big game.
Yeah, we touched on it yesterday. I don't think there's anybody other than Arteta and obviously his staff that thought they'd made the right decision with Havertz. You know, I think the fact that the Zinchenko plays, I don't think that's a major reason that they didn't play well. But I think absolutely the fact that he moved Havertz, as Ali said, 30, 40 yards away from goal when you are the team's goal scorer right now, that makes no sense. Can I just say on his statement, though, because I think we have to remember, what he said was straight after the game.
Right.
Now, can you imagine what's going through his head? They've just blown it, basically. And he'll know that all the questions are going to be coming. And the fact that he turned around and said, you know, we could have 3 or 4, I think we've got to give him a little bit of slack, because when you sat on the bench, you know, the shot that Saka had that went wide when he comes in off his left.
Yep.
When you sat on the bench, that's in.
Right.
But the truth is, it wasn't. It was outside the post and the goalkeeper had it. Saka had another one where he hit the side net. Jesus had a header.
Trossard had the big chance, wasn't it?
One chance, but not 3 or 4. But from where he's watching the game and straight after the game, in his mind, that's where he gets these three or four chances from that they should have scored. I'm sure if he was interviewed today, he wouldn't say that, having re-watched them and having watched the game.
But he would have known that in the second half, at home, knowing
full... What happened in that second? Yeah, how did you put your finger on it, Ali?
Well, he can put his finger on it. It's amazing to me that a team that knows what has happened this weekend in the Premier League, the fact that Liverpool had lost, that you're tying 0-0 at home against a good team in Aston Villa, that you have been better than them in the first half. Every aspect of logical thinking going into the second half, you would have thought, Arsenal going to go on to win this. They were carrying the momentum from the first. And how does this team then become a lesser version of themselves? And when I say a lesser version of themselves, I really mean a team that was unwilling to be who they have been. Go press higher of the field. Your line of confrontation, high energy. It cannot be a physical thing as much as it is a mental thing. It cannot be a physical thing because it is who you are to take that step forward. And the fact that instead of taking a step forward and pressing higher the fields and forcing mistakes higher up the field, you are actually waiting for Aston Villa and allow Aston Villa to grow in confidence in the game, that had no logical thought whatsoever. It does not match the personality or the makeup of Arsenal. So it isn't just one player. We focus on Havertz. It isn't just one player. It was symptomatic across the team that their first reaction, actually, when they got pressed a little bit, was to take a step back instead of taking a step forward. And that goes against everything that we know Arsenal have done this season.
Of course, Arsenal, before taking a look at their next Premier League game, have the little matter of the game in the Champions League against Bayern Munich, all to play for, of course, after that 2-2 draw we saw play out last week. Everyone has Bayern going through with the exception of Steve Nicol. Oh yeah, I remember that argument we had last week. Mario, I want to start with you. How much does what's happened this weekend affect Arsenal going into this tie against Bayern?
It's a difficult situation. Why? Because, you know, Arteta made that comment too. He said, and now it's the time for my team to bounce back. So that is going to be a tough one. But then on the opposite side, you know, Tuchel also don't want to make sure he keeps his name high as well and try to do something at Bayern. You already lost the league, but then going into this situation, you want to make sure that you play against it. They've been your rivalry already when he was at Chelsea. So he knows that. So I have a feeling, you know, like at the beginning of the game, I was all Arsenal before the first game was played because I was like, they're in top form, they're going to do it. Now, seeing this game where they just recently did against Villa, for getting exposed like that, I have a feeling that Bayern definitely has a chance. And because it's in Germany, I think it's not easy to go and win there.
You, of course, put up the argument last week after the first leg that Bayern can't consistently put in back-to-back performances against a team like Arsenal.
Yeah.
If you took your stubborn hat off, given what happened this weekend...
Hold, before you go any further, then.
Yes.
Please tell me, give me two games...
No.
Three games where they've actually played well in a row. They haven't.
They haven't.
It's got nothing to do with being stubborn.
Oh, now we're going back to this. They haven't played well in one game.
It's got nothing to do with being stubborn, though.
No, but this is the point. How much does what happened in that match against Villa, particularly in the second half, make you question your decision going into that second leg to say that Arsenal were going through?
I don't think there's any doubt that it takes a little chip off you. You know, something's chipped away. A bit of confidence does get chipped away. The problem is we don't know how big a chip it is.
Right.
And again, the truth of the matter is it's a horrible half of football that happened absolutely 100% at the wrong time. But it's the first half since the turn of the year. I mean, they've put together so many games and all of a sudden they are horrendous.
But you
to
could
try and put your finger on that,
but the problem
is almost impossible.
I understand what you're saying, but they weren't brilliant against Bayern midweek.
No.
So it's not like they've been brilliant and then all of a sudden it's one bad half against Villa. This has kind of been building a little bit.
To be honest with you, the reason I'm going for Arsenal to win is because I don't trust a Bayern side, particularly at home. I think of the Leverkusen. When Leverkusen started so well, it was, well, now we'll find out how good Leverkusen is. They're coming to Bayern to play in Bayern. And they completely outplayed Bayern. And then Bayern had all the troubles again. And a couple of weeks ago, Dortmund are coming. Bayern are still in supposedly the title race. OK, we're going to see Bayern now. And they got completely outplayed by Dortmund, of all teams. Mm. So, honestly, it's not as much about Arsenal. It's more about a Bayern side that I just don't trust. Because from anywhere, they can collapse.
And you would not be incorrect, Stevie, because we have
Can you
seen,
please explain that
well,
to this
no,
guy?
We have
the problem is now Ali's going to say that Bayern are going to go through, which completely knocks on your argument, doesn't it?
It's just completely agree with me.
Yes, but now he's going to give you a reason why he thinks Bayern are going to go through.
All right, I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's listen and see what he says.
well, let's do that, Stevie. Right.
That's a great idea that I just had.
What I would say is that this is the only thing that Bayern have to play for. The only thing. That's it. This is, obviously, we saw the celebrations at Leverkusen. Yeah, that's over. That's gone. The German Cup, over. Yeah, you got eliminated by Saarbrücken. Over, right? This is the one thing that will get the full attention of Bayern Munich. And talent-wise, this team can match Arsenal. At their best, we haven't seen their best, and that's where I agree with you, Stevie. Yeah. At their best, Bayern can beat Arsenal, and I think will beat Arsenal, and will go through.
Meanwhile, who will win the Premier League? Of course, Manchester City, for the first time in a very, very long time, now have fate very much in their own hands. They win the remaining six games. Yeah. They will be champions once again. Arsenal sits second. Liverpool, of course, who lost to Crystal Palace at home against Anfield, really shooting themselves in the foot as they find themselves 2 points adrift of Man City. What do you want to say, Mario?
I just want to say that Liverpool had everything in their own hands and they're going to give it to City now to dictate it. And we all know City's run. Look, one thing they're good at, you understand, is their focus and the momentum to keep on building. Even when Pep came on TV, this is a couple of weeks ago, and he said, like, oh, we're not in charge anymore. The other ones, who's going to win it? And he said, yeah, the ones that are leading are going to win. That was just a psychologically of him telling, guys, stay calm, stay focused. We're going to get another opportunity. Now they have the opportunity, and now they just have to take it because now they're the leaders.
Ali?
It's hard to look past City. And it's hard to look past how damaging this weekend was for both. We just mentioned Arsenal, but of course Liverpool as well. And mentally what it does to both of those teams. And so if you have to trust somebody, and if this becomes about trust, given what we have seen this weekend, this past weekend, then it is very difficult to see past Manchester City. They have to be the ones that you lean on. I just don't know that... neither Arsenal nor Liverpool get off the canvas after what was a very, very damaging weekend. And it's damaging physically, but most of all, damaging mentally.
Next up for Liverpool, of course, it's Atalanta. And what's interesting, because of what's happened in Europe over the last week, we've talked a lot about the coefficient rankings and how that will affect how many teams will qualify from each league. Because of what's gone on with the likes of West Ham losing and, of course, Liverpool losing as well, England sit third in the coefficient. That is very significant because it means they will not get a fifth spot in the Champions League. That will go to Italy and Germany. And, of course, the reason why that is so significant is because Spurs, we thought, would get that fifth spot, but now it looks very much unlikely that that will be available. So it's all about the race to finish in the top four. Very different performances with different results from these two this weekend. Aston Villa, of course, as we spoke at length, going to Arsenal, great second half, get the 3 points. Spurs were shocking, really bad in that 4-0 defeat against Newcastle. So the question is this, Stevie. Who?
I think I've got to go with Villa. I think the difference between Villa's good performances and bad performances is a lot more on an even keel than Tottenham. Tottenham, it feels as though Tottenham are either up there,
yep,
or they are way down there under this table somewhere. And so, with so few games to go, I'm going to go with the team that feels as though they're more consistent. So that's why I'm going to go with Villa for fourth spot. Yeah.
And of course, Spurs still got to play. Oh, Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City for a bit of fun.
What they can be is spoilers. They can truly ruin somebody's season, or both. It could be Arsenal. It could be Manchester City, for that matter. It could be Liverpool. They are good enough to where, as Stevie says, when they're up there, they can hurt somebody. And I think that's what will be, in the end, a big picture success for Spurs, is that they have improved from last season. Don't know that they have enough to get into the top four, but they can certainly damage somebody else's season and give the damaging blow, sort of the death blow, to their title aspirations.
Mario, it's interesting, like Villa thoroughly deserving of that fourth spot given the results they've got, particularly against the big teams.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I also saw Spurs play. You know, we saw what they did at the back. I think defensively, they were exposed by Newcastle. So I think, look, Emery has enough experience with him going into Europe and playing the European football and qualifying. So he has the experience. So it should also be normal for us to expect him to be there. And I know what Villa wants to build because Villa's focus is now on getting and being part of the Champions League, because the financial reasons, but also where they want to go as a club.
Just a reminder, a lot more discussion about who's going to make it into the Champions League, not only in England, but elsewhere as well, on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Be sure to check it out. No surprise, it is the Xavi Alonso and Bayer Leverkusen celebrations that dominate the sporting headlines in Spain and Germany. We've got Leverkusen intoxicated, of course, beer flowing freely. The champion miracle, says Bild. Meanwhile, AS goes with the new Kaiser. We saw a lot of beer being spilt, of course. The main one was at the press conference. Xavi Alonso addressing... Look away, Stevie. I feel this is something you do not appreciate. No. Or like to see?
The worst, huh?
Beer being wasted. fantastic scene, sir. We saw, of course, brought you live throughout our coverage here on ESPN+. Mario's back with us. Ali, you've been following, of course, this journey that Bayer Leverkusen have been on. What a surprise. We've got to remind ourselves what a surprise this is. If you said Bayer Leverkusen were going to win at the start of the season, it'd be nonsense.
Yeah, and most of the people that are very close to Bundesliga, that are sort of elbow-deep, knee-deep into Bundesliga and Bundesliga history, just could not see this coming. In fact, refused to see this coming. It felt like they were just waiting for the collapse of Leverkusen, or Neverkusen, as they call them, or Vincekusen and all this.
Oh, hey, where'd you pull that from?
What? You know, my Bundesliga coverage, I've learned a few things.
Wow.
And the thing that they kept waiting for was not only the collapse of Leverkusen, but Bayern Munich. That Bayern Munich was going to come. That Bayern Munich was going to be the big bad wolf that they've always historically been in Bundesliga. And that was supposed to happen in the second matchup between Leverkusen and Bayern Munich. It was the opportunity for Bayern Munich to overtake Leverkusen. It was the opportunity for this to be a race. And in that game, I think we saw a true statement from Bayer Leverkusen in saying, nah, no. Not today, not this year, not this season. You belong in a different level altogether. We're winning this thing. They dominated Bayern Munich in that game. They destroyed Bayern Munich in that game. They humiliated Bayern Munich in every facet of the game, from the coaching, individual performance, and team performance. And it's one thing to do it against Werder Bremen, as they did yesterday. It's a completely different thing doing it when everything is in play. And everything was in play against Bayern Munich, and Leverkusen played at a tremendous level. The thing about Leverkusen is that they've done that over the course of the season.
Yeah.
It wasn't just against Bayern Munich. They've been able to reproduce performances time and time again. And the times in which they haven't played well, which hasn't been often, they found ways to win games late. They've done everything that you equate with a championship run and a dominant championship run. They won games in which they didn't play well. They pulled out results where perhaps they didn't deserve it. But for the most part, they've dominated teams with their quality of play, with their possession, with their finishing, with their defending. Every facet of the game has been excellent for Bayer Leverkusen. And in Xabi Alonso, they've had a guy who have found a master plan for this team, for this squad that he put together. He puts clear ideas out there. They're able to execute it. Players have elevated their individual performances, and as a team, they have been unstoppable.
Mario, it's incredible when you think this is the first full season that Xabi Alonso has been a manager.
Yeah, this is amazing. You know, look, as a player, we all know his history, and I played against him myself, so I know how calm he was and always in charge. You know, that the way he played football was, I feel like there's a lot of things. You can see him as a coach. When he came there, they were all about the pressing game, and he started changing the momentum in the sense of, like, being more in possession and trying to control it like that. Then, of course, the details that he brought, you understand, okay, knowing Arteta, so it was easier to get the connection to Saka, brought him over, you understand, and Frimpong, you know, like Grimaldo. Yeah, like, there was one moment where Grimaldo was at Benfica. Everybody knew he was talented, baby, but people couldn't understand that you could get that kid for free. He got him free and make him celebrate moments like this. This is the beauty of football, you understand? Look at people crying, people being happy. I tell you, like, in the beginning, when you win a championship, in the beginning, as a young player, or any person anyway, you first think, why is everybody so happy? But then when you're in the middle of it, and you are experiencing it, now you understand why people are so happy. So it's beautiful to see. So for me, you know, I'm just impressed for him to say no to so many big boys and still staying a coach of Leverkusen next season. Well done.
Bayer Leverkusen are looking to break records still, aren't they? This season's become the first team ever in the history of the Bundesliga to go unbeaten, and they are part of our huge ESPN Plus soccer weekend. It all starts on the Saturday at Wembley, Manchester City against Chelsea. Then on Sunday, Coventry against Manchester United. It's Dortmund against Bayer Leverkusen, and then it's El Clasico, Real Madrid taking on Barcelona at the Santiago Bernabeu. Be sure to be with us. Speaking of Barcelona, they're of course in action against PSG tomorrow. They take a 3-2 lead to the Montjuïc. They are big favourites going into this tie, according to ESPN Bet, but not according to Xavi. This is what he had to say after the result last week. PSG are still the favourites. It'll be very difficult to win in Barcelona. Luis Enrique, meanwhile, speaking ahead of the tie, bullish, saying PSG have never come back to win after losing a first leg, but Tuesday is the day. I thought we at least deserved a draw in the first match. We have to be better this time. We won't hold back. That phrase does not exist for us, and we are convinced we will turn the tie around. Mario is still with us. Mario, how much do what these managers say affect the players, if at all?
It depends what they say, because sometimes you know your manager too, right? If Xavi says like, okay, they are the favorite, no, that's not true. Because he's at home and we all know, like, and he knows himself to play in the Nou Camp. It's not easy for no opponent, you understand? When you go there, the pitch is bigger, the whole atmosphere and everything that you gotta take in. And he is the man with so much experience. So he knows that he might say that to the TV, but in-house at his players, he won't say that. He will say like, guys, make sure that we make them, give them a perfect introduction to what happens at Barcelona. When it goes to, you know, Luis Enrique, it's slightly different because now he has to expose his team. And we all know when you open up PSG and Barcelona plays against them and they manage to keep the ball in the team and they play the way they want to play and they have, you know, like you saw what the young boys are doing now for Barcelona. If he gets exposed and they cut right through them, then they could make PSG look really, really bad. So I hope Luis understands that he has to keep his team really close and tight, because if not, he will be in trouble.
No one's giving Luis Enrique any love, in fact. Everyone has Barcelona going through. Concerningly, me and Stevie have the same scoreline at 3-2.
Concerning for me.
Ali and Mario, meanwhile, going for 2-1. Just too much?
Yeah, I think this is a perfect opportunity for Barcelona. If there was ever a time for Barcelona to go back to who they are, and the culture of who they are as a club, in the quality of their possession and controlling the pace of the game. Control the pace of the game with their quality of possession, taking that possession into the attacking half, not allowing this game to get stretched. That's when PSG and their individuality, obviously, Kylian Mbappe, that's where he takes over. If the game gets stretched and now it's about Kylian Mbappe running over distance, well, it's a mismatch against anybody else in the world. And so if you're Barcelona, control the pace of the game. Don't let it get stretched. Quality of possession, and you win this game.
Meanwhile, Borussia Dortmund taking on Atletico Madrid. Atleti, of course, taking a 2-1 lead into that tie in Germany. Everyone has Atleti to advance to the semi-finals. We'll, of course, be reflecting on both of those games, plus looking ahead in more detail to Manchester City, Real Madrid, Bayern against Arsenal on the next edition of the show.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Mario returns, as we'll be asking him some questions for extra time. And Ali and Steve.
Oh, okay.
Well.
All right. Good.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Ali, Steve, how was your holiday, Ali? Did you have a lovely time?
It was a lot of fun.
Good.
Oh. I was with the family. I spent some time together. That was great. Got to see my son play. That was wonderful.
Wonderful. Okay, very good. Yes. Mario, I'm going to go to you first because your internet's been a bit of a nightmare again. Any takes on the penalty arguments? We talked about this. Should Madueke have been better off given on the score sheet? Palmer was right to take it. Blah, blah, blah. Mario, do you remember this happening between Lampard and Drogba in the final game against your Wigan side?
I can't remember anymore, but if you're like we already jumped on it, if something like this happened, the captain jumps in, but away from that, the coach tells you in advance what needs to be happening, and you have to stick to it. And at the end of the day, I know that everybody wants to score, but if your name is first, it's up to you if you want to allow someone else to score while you have the hat trick already. And if you don't, you should be allowed just to score your goal.
The background for Mario is very minimalistic. The shelves are a little empty.
No, but it's Mario, isn't he? He's a minimalistic sort of guy.
Like his internet is minimalistic.
Yeah, well. Very much so. If you're Gareth Southgate, we talked about this on the show. You asked me if you're Gareth
Southgate. No, Ali.
If you're Gareth Southgate, are you starting Cole Palmer at the Euros? No.
No. Ooh. There's no chance he'll start Cole Palmer.
No.
But does he play?
No.
He'll be in the squad, he'll be on the bench if they get in a situation where they're desperate or they need a goal, then he'll certainly come on.
But he's not first off the bench, is what you're saying?
No. And it's Gareth Southgate.
Well, yes.
Who doesn't tend to take any chances.
Jordan Henderson ahead of Cole Palmer.
Hey, maybe if they go to penalties, ahead of penalties, they put him in. Maybe.
No, it takes a bit of forward planning, that.
OK.
Stevie, sometimes managers get let go because their message becomes stale and doesn't get through to the players as it did when they first took over. As a manager, can you sense when your message is no longer getting through? And is there anything you can do to deal with this?
Yes and no.
OK.
Yeah, you can tell when you've told. It starts with a couple of players.
Yeah.
And if you can move them on and bring... I think the key is to keep freshening everything up every year.
OK.
If you do that, then it doesn't become old because you're passing it on to new players, and the players you have are passing it on as well. Even though they've stopped listening to it, they still know that it's right and they're passing it on. When you don't... either don't sign players or you sign bad players... And eventually, regardless of what you say, A, they can't follow instruction, and B, they've just heard it so many times and you've said it so many times that you're just talking to the wall.
You know what happens as well is that as a manager, you come into a situation and there are certain players that you trust because you feel like these are guys that see the game the way that you want the game to be played, and they see your game plan and they execute it well. So you lean on those guys heavily to begin with. But those guys eventually get older. Mm-hmm. And so now you're going to have to look beyond them and look for somebody else to lean on. But those guys are still around. And those guys that were your guys to begin with now are the same guys that can hurt you. Because those are the guys that have received that message time and time and time again. And now they're older. And if they don't take the fact that they're no longer player or they're no longer the main guys in the locker room, if they don't take that well, they're the same guys that can sink you. So the guys that elevated you to begin with are also the same guys that can sink you unless you're able to handle it.
That's why your recruitment's so important.
Right.
It really is.
Yeah.
Alec Ferguson could be in charge of a lot of teams and not get anything because of the players they have.
Mario?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with the guys, you understand? It's very important because also what you want to be careful of is that when the team start building a group and it goes against the manager, then you know you lost everything because now they start, you know, saying like, oh, then you got him again. Oh, you don't want that. That's one of the key things. And the other part, what Stevie said, you got to refresh at the right time and the right players that you always make sure that you stay in control. If you lose control, it's almost like a household. If you lose control of your household, you're not in charge anymore.
Everybody forgets, right? The Chelsea situation is a perfect example. They've had three managers in the space of a year, probably, right? Mm-hmm. It took Fergie 4 years to get rid of the ones he didn't want and bring in the ones he wanted. And then, obviously, the young guys. And Klopp's the same. So all these people shouting for Pochettino's head because Chelsea's sitting in eighth position, they need to just calm down. They need to calm down. He needs some time to get a few out and bring in a few that are going to not only help them win games, but have an influence on all of the rest of the team.
And every once in a while, as a manager, you have to be willing and you have to be able to cut the head of one of your big guys. That sends a message.
Right.
Because if it can happen to that guy, right, it can happen to anybody. And that maintains you as the decision maker, as the alpha dog in that locker room.
Yeah.
I'm still making decisions. And so, unless you go along with what I'm saying, this can happen to you.
That's Fergie, isn't it? Keane, yeah. Stam.
What's going on with Fergie all the time?
You're not hurrying in the news.
Ali, what's more likely? Manchester City to win the treble or Bayer Leverkusen to win the treble?
Bayer Leverkusen to win the treble. Absolutely, Bayer Leverkusen to win the treble. Look, they're playing lower tier opposition in the Pokal final.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of Europa League, now that Liverpool has struggled against Atalanta, it really opens up a path for Leverkusen to win the treble. And they've already won one, which Manchester City are yet to do that.
Stevie, do Liverpool go all out on Thursday or play the youngsters?
No, they go all out.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though it could be a detriment then to their Premier League campaign?
They're not in a position to pick and choose when they think they're going to win or when they're going to lose. You've got six games left.
Mm-hmm.
You may have three or four more in Europa. It's we need to win every game. This is the time of year where you have to go and win games.
But they look so tired, didn't they, against Palace?
Well, sometimes it's unlucky.
Oh, right, OK.
Get yourself out there.
Is it unlucky? Or should it?
Unlucky is your own word. It's get yourself out there, right? Let's forget all the tactics, forget all the nonsense, forget all the set piece, forget all that, right?
Right.
The only thing I want to see is what's going on in there.
He's pointing to his heart, if you're listening to the podcast.
What is going on in your heart?
That's the only thing I want to see. I want to know what's going on in there, and I want to know what's going on in there, and I'm pointing to my head as well.
Okay.
I just thought I'd help you out.
Right? There you are, I like this. Closed captioning.
Yeah.
Start, bench, or drop, Mario. Lampard, Xavi, Seydorf.
Oof. Start, bench, or drop. That's difficult, huh? Oh, my God. I need goals. So, oh my God, do I start Lampard then? He can score my goals for me. This is a bad question. This is so bad.
That's a toughie, isn't it?
Oh, Xavi. It's so good. This one is... Oh, guys, thank you very much for killing me like this. I'll probably play Xavi and Lampard. I will play Lampard and Xavi will be the one that will be on the bench, and then Seydorf. We don't need him because there's a reason why. He will come back for the next game, because then we will tell Lampard, this one is better for you to start, but the next game you have to sit out.
How good was Seydorf, Mario?
Obviously not good enough.
Oh, yeah.
He was really good. You know? No. He was very good. I mean, the funny part is actually he texted me yesterday, so that's kind of the funny part. You understand? Because he's like doing some game is coming up. Well, anyway, he was really good. Why I thought he was very good? You know, sometimes you have players that are very good with a back to the goal. And I had a moment with him when I played for Holland, and he played in front of me, and the man would be really tight to him, and I would look somewhere else to play the ball. And then after like maybe 20, 30 minutes, he screams at me, he goes, Mario, stop doing that. I go, what do you mean? He said, even if he's behind me, give me the ball. And I go like, okay. I give him the ball. He turns away from the man without any problems. And he said to me, you can attack when you give me the ball. And I normally, when you play a player in, you want to stay behind him to give him an option to play the ball back. But he said, you don't need to worry about that. Just keep on, attack, and then I will make my turn and put you in. And I said, okay. And he showed it. He proved it to me, and he kept on doing it. And we played for the national team. So, you know, then you play on the highest level.
What a player to have alongside you, eh?
I was the same with Barnsley.
Really?
And I played behind Barnsley, Johnny Barnes, same thing. I could just give him it and go.
Right.
I didn't need to go, well, I better wait and see what happens.
You knew what was going to happen.
Well, I knew it was going to happen. He wasn't losing it, number one, so I could just go. It's great.
Final question. Mario, which game was more emotional for you, your first professional game or your last?
My first. Because I think that's where you're so nervous. You're like 50,000 people and they all cheer for you. It's the first time that you stand in a stadium where you are not capable to talk to anybody. So I think that was probably for me the most emotional because you worked so hard to achieve it. The last one, I mean, it's emotional, but no. I think my first one because finally I got there.
Mario, did you know your last was going to be your last?
In a way, yes, because I already had my journey and I had my plan that I wanted to move over to America. So I was already planning ahead in my mind and I knew that this was going to be my final season. So, yes.
Emotional first one as well?
For me, yeah, the first one because your question is a very valid one. I didn't know that my last game was going to be my last game.
Right.
I had a pretty good idea that it was going to be my last game with the current team that I was in.
Which team were you at? The Philadelphia Union?
No, Chivas USA.
That was the really bad time.
Yes.
I can't bring up.
Those are the years that we don't talk about then.
Right, yeah. Okay. So you're playing for that really bad team.
Yes. And
it doesn't exist anymore.
Correct. And so I had a pretty good idea that it was my last game with that club. And in between contract negotiations to go to whatever the next club was going to be, ESPN came about and put forth an offer that allowed me then the opportunity to be here with you. And how could I deny myself?
Well, most definitely.
The chance to be here.
And quite long holidays as well.
Yeah,
Stevie?
What?
I can honestly say neither.
Your first professional game wasn't emotional?
No.
Stevie, you're so Stevie.
Honestly.
Did you know it was your first game?
I was too cold.
Really?
Honestly.
What about your first game?
I came on as a sub against Arbroath, and I've told you that before. Arbroath's pitch is, the stand on the far side is 10 yards from the North Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the middle of winter, and I was on the bench. And I'm talking 1980, maybe 81.
Yeah.
And we didn't have insulated big jackets or any of that gear.
No.
Or tracky bottoms.
No, you're right.
We were just sat there for a bit, an hour and 70 minutes. And he went, right, you're going on. I was like, ah. Oh, no. I couldn't feel my feet.
But what about your first game for Liverpool? Was that emotional?
Not particularly, no.
Yeah.
No, just cold heart. That's what he's pointing
out. No, you're a little
Stevie,
bit nervous.
Stevie, you were not nervous when you came on?
I was a little nervous. I started at Birmingham, it was my first game. But what's the best way of putting this? It wasn't Man United at Old Trafford they were in. It was Birmingham away. The pitch was wrong. They're a horrible team. A half-decent crowd and
debut for Liverpool.
I mean, obviously I was a little nervous, but emotional, no.
Okay, well, what do you have in that heart that you were talking about earlier?
For certain things.
Cholesterol.
Yes, a lot of it.
There is a lot
of shepherd's pie.
Yeah, they told me to get me.
That is it. We are done.
You know, you're interested.
What's that? What are you saying?
You're interested in my
they told
my
him to get his cholesterol down.
I was going to talk about my medical situation, but you know.
Oh, what a massive surprise. just a reminder, ESPN FC is back with you tomorrow. We'll be reflecting
on for a pizza.
Champions League matches. Oh, Stevie has another butter sandwich.
Yes. A large sandwich.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.